por Dios, con Dios por la fe, por su tremenda y afable amor por tu cuerpo. It is an honor and privilege for me to be in the presence of this team for your Committee of Foreign Affairs. I would like to express my appreciation to your Excellency for providing me with this access to peaceful use of nuclear energy. During the years later on, more notes were added to the state agreement, while Canada, France, Germany, and later on, signed agreements with Iran on nuclear technology and related issues. An agreement reached with Germany to construct Bushehr reactor, and at the time, none of those countries told us, you have enough oil and gas reserved, and therefore you do not need nuclear energy. It was a logical decision taken before the Islamic Revolution. Of course, after the revolution in 1979, all the trade agreements came to a halt. This laid the foundation for Iran's mistrust toward West. Germany left Bushehr, and we had to turn to Russia to complete construction of the reactor. Now 28 years have passed since that time, and Bushehr reactor has not yet been put into operation. 95% of this construction has been finished and is in the phase of injection of U.S. Therefore, after the Islamic Revolution, that the U.S. and the West never wanted to find out its cause, we tried to stand on our own feet, and we embarked upon enriching uranium and heavy water oil. This is needed advanced knowledge and sophisticated technology. Iran has become a member of non-proliferation treaty, NPT, since signing the treaty in 1974, and has been committed to the safeguards of International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA. Therefore, it is not right to be said that Iran has had secret activities. There is the possibility that some of the cases may have not been reported due to the lack of our experience in this regard. But however, the agency has not so far announced any breach of law on our part. It has confirmed that Iran has announced all its activities, and that so far there has not been any deviation toward military purpose. In 2003, there has been much hue and cry by certain countries that Iran intended to produce nuclear weapons, and that they were concerned about Iran's intention. Since we were fully ready to cooperate with the agency, they asked us to suspend our activities and not to expand them, and we acted accordingly. They asked us to sign the additional protocol and implement it, which we acted accordingly and implemented it voluntarily, while it had not been yet approved by the Islamic Consultative Assembly or Parliament. Then they demanded us to respond to more questions, which we did. We suspended our activities for 2.5 years and promoted our cooperation with the agency. We allowed 2,400 days, 24,000 hours, man-hour days, of inspection of our site to the IAEA inspectors. Then we opened our military site, as demanded by them, which was indeed very unpleasant for our military commander. They inspected the state site for 27 times. In fact, 56 military sites have been inspected by the inspectors of the agency. Without finding any abnormal, and announced that the agency is not in a condition to declare Iran's unannounced cases. You know that inspection process is a long one. In the case of Japan, for instance, it took 40 years before it was announced that they had no unannounced cases. And that country was awarded the certificate for its focus. He did not leave any of their questions unanswered. In March 2004, he offered us a timetable. It took 5 months for them to consider it, and then only to say that it was not accepted. And that they would offer their package. In August 2005, the same process was repeated. In this case, they offered their first package of inspection, incentives, and demanded us to desist from our rights in exchange for unimportant and in some cases, in certain cases, like better access to internet. We promptly rejected that package and came to realize that, that we could not fulfill our nuclear rights through negotiation with the U.S. We are committed to NPT, and accordingly we enjoy certain rights. They embarked upon issuing resolution against us and said that we should suspend enrichment process as a prerequisite for negotiation. We said we had previously suspended that process for 2.5 years to no avail. In fact, their intention was to deprive us from our rights. They issued 3 resolutions, 2 of which in favor of economic embargo against our country. Of course, this approach was not explained to us, because in 1960, during the campaign for nationalization of Iran's oil industry, the British authorities issued a resolution and said that nationalization of Iran's oil industry constitutes a threat to the world's peace and security. But our people and government had determined to continue their campaign. It was for that very reason that a coup d'etat came into being, which led to the downfall of the government, the democratic government of Mr. Mossadegh, and dictatorship of Shah returned to the country. It was the price that the nation paid for nationalization of its oil. Considering the conditions prevailing in the world, we have come to understanding that we have no option but to resist in order to fulfill our rights, and we should pay the price for this decision. Honorable members, we are confident about the peaceful nature of our action, as Her Excellency mentioned. In fact, answer that question, ladies. It is a religious verdict from our supreme leader that using nuclear bombs, keeping it, and making it is forbidden in Islam. Moreover, our military doctrine is against manufacturing any type of atomic bomb. Therefore, our activity is totally peaceful nature. Yet to make sure the rest of the world about this fact, we announced that we are ready to enter into partnership with others in our project. In our view, everybody is entitled to express concern about an issue. For this very reason, we propose different ways like formation of a consortium, partnership in uranium enrichment, etc. In a bid to build trust, unfortunately, 5+1 countries lost 2 years, which was a valuable time for negotiation. Now we have around 3,000 centrifuges into which we are injecting U.S. 6. We possess enough amount of yellow cage, part of which has been purchased from South Africa before the Islamic Revolution, and the rest are being produced inside Iran through making use of three uranium mines in the country. UCF factory in its fund converts yellow cake to UF6 gas, and this gas in turn is injected into centrifuges in the tanks, and the enrichment is done on a 5% scale, which is needed for the reactor for generating energy. We complete a fuel cycle, and it is entirely an indigenous technology. Of course, we bought some equipment from others, but the trade of work is a domestic one. Meanwhile, the West lost many valuable years, and the only emphasis on suspension, we cannot suspend uranium enrichment because this is our right to make use of this technology. But as regards the concept of mediation towards military purpose, we are ready to negotiate with them and remove their concern vis-a-vis our peaceful program. Thank you very much. The floor is yours for questions.
I just want to, before opening for discussion, I wish to introduce the British Consulate General in Cape Town, Mr. Richard Wood. He's a British Consulate General who is with us here this morning. You are welcome. A delivery which you've long been waiting for. Now is the time to engage with the ambassador of the Iran Republic on this night. Open for, I'm opening now for time for discussion. I think we'll observe our routine of taking one question at a time and then we can do another one. Just to make sure that everybody really needs to get accommodated. So, Mr. Mewa, honorable member, Mewa Ramkovin.
Thank you. First, yes, in case it is misunderstood by the Iranian people, and people present here, the yellow cake that the ambassador talked about is bought by your country and supplied by my country before the advent of democracy in South Africa.
Yes.
As you do know, that South Africa was subjected to embargoes, in particular oil embargoes, the war that lay between what you call the Islamic Republic of Iran at that stage in the rule of the Shah in apartheid South Africa. In case some people here have a misunderstanding of South Africa supplying yellow tape to Iran, please be aware of the fact that it is not in the sense of
sure.
Secondly, I want to raise a very pertinent issue. We have senior, we have access to the research. We do follow very, very precisely the development in Iran because of our, the voluntary nature of South Africa suspending its atomic energy exercise, especially with the dismantling of our nuclear power. And our insistence on total disarmament, nuclear disarmament. But there is immeasurable doubt in the minds of certain observers, but that cannot exclude about the intention of Iran's efforts, albeit that we have declared policy, and we appreciate that, that it is a peaceful means. But will it be true, or is it true? I don't know whether your diplomatic status will allow a vague question like this, that certain aspects of the relevant scope and nature of your program has not been disclosed.
I think as you mentioned, and I clarified in my speech that I mentioned that we in fact bought yellow cake from South Africa before the Islamic Revolution. Islamic Revolution happened in 1979, and of course apartheid was still running this country. And as you know, Iran was second partner to apartheid regime. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the third organization of the apartheid regime had a second partner, and they stopped supplying the oil to the state regime, which in our understanding broke the backbone of the apartheid regime. To answer your question, as I mentioned, up to now, more than 24,000 hours, our site has been inspected by the inspector of IAEA. More than 56 military sites have been inspected by them. And up to now, none of them could claim that any undeclared case they have been able to find. We do not have anything undeclared. The nature of our activity is yes, there has been some shortfall from our side. As I mentioned, we came to the power in 1979. The revolutionary people came to the power. They didn't have enough experience that what is the requirement of the agency and they should declare all in time. There has been some shock. We do not deny. But now everything is clear. We have declared our activity. We have let them to come and inspect. We have mentioned that we are ready to have partnership with any country wish to have partnership with Iran in nuclear energy. to establish a consortium and let them to monitor 24 hours our activity. Moreover, to build a trust between the Iranian side and the West, we suspended our activity totally for 2.5 years, but gaining nothing. Therefore, we are sure, as I mentioned, it is the verdict of our leader, it is the military doctrine of Iran, that we do not go after the atomic bomb. And atomic bomb is no use nowadays. To use against whom? For what purpose? Therefore, I think we should be sure that as our leaders are openly mentioning, and we are ready, we have mentioned to the West that we are ready to sign an agreement with them to clarify those ambiguities which still exist in each and every heart which they think. Therefore, they should not say, okay, this is the intention of Iran that they may divert in future. You cannot take a person to the court for his intention, which you do not know. You guess. Therefore, we are sure about all that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of points of clarification. I listened with great interest to the ambassador's address, but he mentioned at one point hearing the cry by certain countries. He also mentioned the West, and he mentioned the Atomic Energy Board. And then throughout the period that he described, from 2003 through 2004, 2005, he talked about they. And I'm just wondering whether he could be a bit more specific. I mean, are all these bodies included in they throughout that period? Or who are they at this point? Because they get accused of a number of things throughout, and I wondered if you could just be a bit more specific over that period, the development of your concerns about certain countries, certain entities. And it's important at the end, because you say, right at the end of your address, we are ready to negotiate with them. And I just like to know who them are, you know, they, them, and so on. Because, and why negotiate? Because I think when South Africa agreed to dismantle its nuclear capability and missiles and so on, I don't know that there was any negotiation. I think they just up and did it. So I just wondered whether you could be more specific about what you mean by negotiating with them.
Well, no, I think your question should be answered by the British consul
and his allies.
In one occasion, I mentioned five and one. Five plus
yes.
One.
Yeah.
The permanent member of the Security Council starts Germany.
Uh-huh.
It is very clear. You mentioned for dismantling your nuclear bomb, we did not have any discussion. I have the proof that you had many discussions, a long discussion, especially with America. If you have read the letter of His Excellency President Mbeki in 2004, which was published in the ANC site, and I have a copy here with me, and I may quote him. Before our liberation in 1994, the U.S. government engaged our movement in discussion aimed at persuading us to discontinue the program for the production of the missiles the apartheid regime had intended to use for the delivery of weapons of mass destruction. We agreed to this and kept our side of the bargain. The U.S. government had undertaken to provide the new democratic government in our country with the resource we would need to ensure the deployment to other high technological projects, technical projects of the scientists, engineers, and technicians who had been involved in the missile development program. Sadly, and regrettably, the U.S. government never gave us a single cent of the money it had promised. It necessarily impacted negatively on the development of science and technology in our country. Therefore, you had the negotiation with the America, especially at the West, and you did not get that's why we advise the honorable members to be careful in that regard. Again, also, they may promise you, because now you are speaking about renewing your nuclear, your fuel tax. And they may promise you, no, we'll provide you. Will supply you. We are sure they will not supply you. We know and you know what happened in Covert plant. It was a sabotage. And we know and you may know who are those they sabotaged in your nuclear reactor. The same people promise you we will supply. We will build for you. They will not do. This is our experience, 50 years of experience. And whenever something goes wrong, they claim, yes, your activity is against peace and security. They are using nuclear bombs. They have used. They are threatening other nations. But still they claim they are peaceful. They are civilized. We do not believe any of this slogan. It comes from them. Because our experience is otherwise.
Thank you, Chairman. I listened to the ambassador. I'm not sure about the sabotages, the recent sabotages over Cuba, because there's still a lot of debate on that, but that's not the issue. Now, the question I would like to ask is, and I understand you say, what's the use of an atom bomb to use against whom, for what purpose, etc. But my first question would be, surely Iran has enough oil in a certain sense. Now, there's nothing wrong to develop your own technology. No one can say you're not allowed to do that. But of course it will be a question out there, do you really need it? Nuclear? Is it cheaper? Just the ratio, the argument behind why we've got the resources. That's the first question. Second question is, I criticize double standards. And the United States, the West and Israel is quite often guilty of that. There's no doubt in my mind, and I think there's more than enough arguments to prove that on double standards, on specific on these issues. There's rumors that Israel got nuclear power, for example, etc., etc. But then I read a quote that Iran would wipe itself from the face of the earth. Now, surely that makes tension in the whole region as such. Mm-hmm. Is a more realistic vision towards Israel possible? Because surely that would take a lot of tension from this problem and maybe make it easier to solve. Or am I wrong in my perceptions?
Thank you. Yes, it is economical. For generating 7,000 megawatts of electricity by nuclear reactor, you can take 200 million barrels of oil. Let us say that each barrel costs today $80.
And
dollars.
Up to 100 now, yeah.
If 100, that means $20 billion. Moreover, it is safe. Moreover, it is clean, more clean than oil. And you know, fossil, oil and gas one day will come to an end. Resources, fossil resources. And we have to answer the future generation of our country. Besides that, the question is that, if it is so, why the same countries, the Western countries, as I mentioned here, America, Canada, British, France, Germany, all of them, during the time of Shah, were advising that dictatorship regime that you should have this technology. And they signed several agreements with the regime of Shah. The Americans proposed to build 20,000 different reactors for Iran, which was cost, I think that time, $8 billion. How they can say after 30 years, which our population has raised to 70 million, three times more than the previous population, we do not need this economy, because surely it is economy. Because you mentioned about Israel. As far as I know and my knowledge, this type of slogan was given during the time of the movement of black movement in South Africa. Maybe that time the slogan was to wipe off apartheid regime. I'm sure the black movement targeted the political entity of apartheid regime, not physical entity of South Africa as a nation. President Ahmadinejad raised a few questions in that regard. And regarding Israel, we have our own policy. Every nation, every country is entitled to have its own policy. Our policy is based on one vote for one person. We say, if you believe in democratic country and in democracy, which you shout throughout the world, then let the people go to ballot box, Christian, Jews, Muslims, and vote. Then we will see the political entity of Israel remain. What happened to Yugoslavia? What happened to Soviet Union? But Russia is there. Yugoslavia is there. Nothing happened. Secondly, he said, President Ahmadinejad, his second question was that, okay, let us accept that this Holocaust is a reality. Why you do not let the scientists, the academicians, to investigate more on that issue? If anybody speaks about this issue, you caught him and put him in the jail. And if that is true, and that has happened in the West, why the Palestinian people in the Middle East should pay the price? You should pay the price. These are the questions, Mr. I tell you, we are not against the Jews. The history of Iran, we are failure of Jews. 2,700 years back, when the Jews were in the Babylonian jail, we saved them. Today, the number of the Jews in Iran is the biggest number after Israel in the Middle East. The number of the Jews has increased after the revolution. Recently, 5,000 of them have come back from Israel. They have their representative in parliament. They are practicing their religion. they are having their own school. They are not against the Jews. Maybe I should also explain to you, even during the World War, you cannot find a single Jews in Germany which was Iranian origin have been killed because of the good relation which was existing between the Shah of the time and Hitler. We are not against this. What we are speaking is about democracy. If you believe in democracy, let the people go to the ballot box. Why you are not letting them? Then we will see where is Israel. What happened to the Israel? I hope I have answered your question. If you want to, for more clarification, I'm ready to go ahead.
Yeah, well, sorry, sir. Sorry, sir, I don't want to go into the way. I don't understand the democracy argument, to be honest with you. You mean the people of the whole region must vote and then Israel will not exist anymore, or what does it mean?
I mean Palestinian people, Israeli people, not whole region. Palestinian in Israel, in the Palestinian line, occupied land, they should let them to go to the ballot box. Each person, one person for one vote. Then they should let them to choose the government of their own choice, own wish, on this. Then we agree with that. Whatever the people of Palestine decide, they accept.
So you create another minority that fight again. I know it's not two states, but that's the one we're doing.
I'm sorry, about two states also, I think today the Americans also are researching on one state solution. You cannot go for two state solution in Israel. The settlement in Israel has been situated in such a way that you cannot go for two state solution. Unless you have, and it happened in South Africa, now the black and white are living with one another peacefully. They are Jews, they are Christians, they are following the traditional religion, and they are living peacefully. Why should not let them, the Israeli and Palestinian people decide on the same condition?
Thank you.
Come back to nuclear.
Thank you very much, Chair. Your Excellency, my understanding of the NPT is that the membership is voluntary. Now, given all the rules that you cited in the presentation that Iran went through, I wonder if you have weighed the merits and demerits of the continued membership of the NPT, and whether you have considered terminating that membership, and if not, why not?
Surely we are not going to leave NPT. We are going to remain in NPT because it is in favor of Iran, it is in favor of the people of the world. But NPT has two sides. It gives you right and it creates commitment for you. Right of having nuclear energy for peaceful purpose and commitment not to divert. In both sides, we are sure that neither we are going to divert, and we are sure that we need this technology for this purpose. Therefore, we are not going to leave NPT. Besides that, we can also use the technological know-how, which according to the framework of NPT, the countries who have that technology should give although they are denying us now, but in future we hope still we can get benefit of to have the support of other countries which have this technology.
Thank you, Chapter 10. I'll start by saying, in the modern days, we need advanced science and technology to keep the standards which will contribute to reduce poverty and unemployment. I think that's true. But my concern is one, from your own report, that I want you to find out if you can clarify us that because Iran is committed to NPT, and then also it is complying with law protocol, and then it includes the inspection of sites. Therefore, from your own opinion, what can lead to so much outcry, the concern which is raised about Iran?
You know, Shah was the ally of America. And he could have anything and he could do anything. But he was moving in line with their policy. Iran is now an independent country. And the human cry is because we are going according to our own policy. We are independent. We are not dependent on them. We are not listening to them. Therefore, they don't want us to have this technology and making so much noise. As I mentioned, before the revolution, they were advising Iran to have this technology. The only reason that they are making so much noise and outcry is that Iran is not their ally anymore. I don't know, I could answer your question.
May I just have a follow on that? Can we have a statement from you, sir? You know, we in South Africa, we have a declared policy on the issue, and I'm satisfied in my mind that you're aware of our position at the United Nations Security Council and all other multilateral fora in respect of Iran and nuclear energy. But just to refresh our minds, I'd like to read this in the national sector. We in South Africa are committed to a position which says, and this is documented very clearly for us, that the actions of the Security Council are to reinforce, and I repeat the word reinforce, the authority of the board of the IAEA and the agency, and are therefore by their nature not intended to be punitive. That we take into consideration that it is your right and your duty to protect your country with respect to having a nuclear energy for commercial purposes. You have intrinsic rights to do so. If we have that, any country should have that. But there is a doubt that while that is an intrinsic right to have, but there is this fear that you have the capacity to convert your peaceful uses to a nuclear arsenal. And let's not beat around the bush. You are, I impute from your statements made here that you're no longer the good boy of the West. You're no longer the good boy like the Shah was of America. You're asserting your own authority. You're identifying your personality as a nation. You define yourself in a particular way. And there is no doubt of the fact that given the relations of nations in the current milieu, you are a threat to to the existing hegemony of the West in general and America in particular, that their power is operating in the region, and that the emergence of Iran as a nuclear power undoubtedly poses a threat, as you did pose a threat with Saudi Arabia as the world's second largest oil producer. You could do this again. So given the extension of that argument, to what extent do you think, Mr. Mathur, that you are a threat to the international community?
We are not a threat to international community. As you know, non-alliance movement, which is consisting of 118 countries, have supported Iran, including South Africa. The Islamic Conference, which is consisting of 57 countries, they also supported Iran's position. If you mean the world community or a few, we do not believe in that. The world community is not few countries which are sitting in the Security Council and imposing their wish on others. For last 250 years, Iran has not invaded any country of the region, while it was invaded by Iraq, by the help and support of West, especially America. Besides that, as I mentioned in the beginning of my speech, we are an Islamic country. Islam preaches peace. Islam is the religion of knowledge. Islam is religious of tolerance. Our understanding, our Islamic values does not allow to go against any country to be trade against any person. Yes, if they think so, few countries, we cannot stop them to teach. As we are sure about our intention, we are sure about our program, we are sure about our activity.
Just one clarity on two issues. Following up on this issue of suspicion, which is, I accept you on a claim to explain. There was a recent visit by the Russian president to Iran, and upon questions about his views about this matter, he said there was no hard evidence that Iran was diverting from peaceful purposes. But also he made an important point, which he added that, however, he too was not totally convinced. You were saying that the suspicion is still there. So he qualified his statement of non-existence of hard evidence of the diversion. But he says, however, the suspicion was there and it needs to be dealt with. So this cloud of suspicion is still there. He himself couldn't remove it. So I'd like your comment on that. And the last measure is on the issue of negotiation, which you mentioned at the end of your presentation, of your willingness to negotiate with them. There's this current issue against another suspicion that your country's appointment of Mr. Sahid Talib replacing the previous negotiator is an indication of your hard stance on unwillingness to negotiate, so to speak. So that's why I'm raising the issue. If you could clarify that.
Okay, we'll start from the second question.
So there is this issue of some less of being there with what you call official progress, but you know there is this population which do not seem to be quite fully believing. Now then, perhaps if you answer that question, you will tell us what is the right specifically want to do in Africa. Or have you just hit the point now where you really feel that there is no more to be done? We go ahead anyway. And then that, of course, leads to the issue of the transport.
I really do not understand that you mentioned that by appointing Mr. Jalili, that we mean that we are not willing to negotiate. Mr. Jalili was, as you know, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs. He is a man of negotiation. The Deputy Minister cannot be unnegotiated. Moreover, we have in Persian something in poetry. It says, Tarekhum ne mey salamat, shikanat agar sabuni. If a soldier has gone, the commander-in-chief is there. The decision of National Security Council of Iran must be approved by Supreme Leader. Therefore, if Secretary General of Security Council, National Security Council is changed, nothing will happen. Because the decision must be approved by the leader. Supreme Leader is there. Supreme Leader is not changed. The policy of Iran in that regard is not changed. We were wishing to negotiate. We are officially declaring that we are ready and we are willing to negotiate to remove all the ambiguities which still exist in their opinion. Then, coming back to your third question, the suspicion can be raised about any issue. The Western countries, after 2 years of suspension, which we did voluntarily, after implementing the additional protocol, after letting the agency to inspect our site, military site, which is so sensitive for any country, after letting them to inspect all their sites which they require, they ask. They said, no, they are not satisfied. Then we asked them, what makes you satisfied? They said, okay, dismantle it, close it down. Then he would be satisfied and he would be sure. That cannot be answered to an issue. In future, we may also address their question and their wish and their suspicion to remove their ambiguity. At the end of the day, again they said, no, you're not sure. What shall we do? We should forget our rights, which NPC has given to us, not the Western country. We are signatory to NPC. If this NPC is good for Bolivia, that should be good for Iran also. And the second question is that if your suspicion, why they are not suspicious about the Israeli, which are having 400 nuclear warheads? Why they are not suspicious about the future use of Americans, which they used once, twice, in Hiroshima and in Nagasaki? Why they are helping India, which is not a member of NPC? It goes back to double standard issue. Once you are bad boy, and whatever you do, you are suspicious. Bad boy according to their understanding. Once you are good boy, you are moving according to their wish, you are, yes, everything is alright. Therefore, yes, I know President Putin mentioned that he up to now, as Agency has mentioned, we could not find anything. It shows that Iran suspended. Russia, as you know, is also a member of the Security Council. Russia is our neighbor. Naturally, they want Iran to be defended. Iran not to have this technology. We are also maybe having a similar position as the West have. Again, we cannot accept this type of position. We are very much determined to go ahead with this technology, with our program. And as I mentioned, we are ready to pay the price. We have paid up to now and we are ready to pay the price. No give up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the question of the Constitution remaining keeps coming back. And I'm not going to repeat it because I think the Ambassador has covered me on this particular area, particularly that Iran has signed the additional protocol, which I understand allows for full inspection. And that this has been done, but still the suspicion continues. I find this rather quite puzzling. I'm not sure whether perhaps it would help if the rest of the world got to know if this is possible, how Iran is actually using its nuclear technology in terms of peaceful uses, because I think if then, you know, this becomes well publicized, then perhaps the suspicion would either go or it would be reduced. But the other point I want to raise, Chairperson, is this question of partnership. you have informed us that you are actually ready to enter into partnership with others in your process. Now, my curiosity is, what is the reaction, what is the response of those who are concerned to your offer of them coming into partnership with you in the process? In which case, if they did, then they would know exactly what is happening in your country. So what is their reaction to your offer so far?
We didn't have any positive reaction. We suggested to them they can have partnership in our project, in our technology, in our reactor, and be there and monitor. But we didn't receive any positive reaction. Because their intention is that Iran should not have this technology. As I said, after so much inspection, they said no. We asked them, okay, what makes you satisfied? They said no. If you close it down, then it would become satisfied. That is not answer to an issue. If you are having suspicion, then we are offering you to be there. We have mentioned our president in the United Nations in front of the board. He suggested that Iran is ready to have a consortium of few countries to be involved in Iranian nuclear technology and Iranian nuclear program. None of them answered positively, but I feel that offer is there. As soon as they agreed, they are ready to go into negotiation with them. And I still, you know, several times we have told the Western countries, you can give us the list of your ambiguities. And we are ready to remove one by one. As we are doing now with the agency. You know, the issue of plutonium must stop by Iran, and it was mentioned in the report of Al-Baradei last month. Therefore, it is up to them to decide. Clearly, we don't know by the consumption, the kind of consumption we which we have today. Maybe it will last 25 up to 30 years. Because you know, now Iran is one of the importers of the petrol. One of the biggest importers of petrol. They are importing. Every year we are paying $5 billion to import petrol from other countries. Because we do not have enough production in our country. And the consumption in Iran is too high because the price of the gasoline, the petrol, in Iran, 1 liter is about 8 cents. And you imagine a country of 70 million with this type of consumption and the low price, what is going to happen? Therefore, we are not sure about the durability of our reserve. But our estimation is at most 30 years.
I think that we have reached the end of our intention.
I also would like to thank you, Dr. Jan Harvey, a member, to listening to us, and hope we'll have again another opportunity to be with you to speak about this issue, which is very sensitive, and I think this is the issue which is raising gradually on course in South Africa, because as I understand, South Africa is importing about 60% of its energy from outside, maybe 40 or 35% from coal, 5% about 5% from cobalt. The rest you are importing. If the price of oil goes up to $100 or $200, then you imagine how much money you have to put in that field. This is the need of South Africa. You are happy you have realized that it is the need of your country, and you are sure that you will support your government to have this technology for future use of your nation. Again, I would like to thank you all of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank
Bandit,
I know you're not going to consider.
Hello.
Mama is Nigel Tenzin.
Okay,
you
can
see the chat.
Okay,
I'll just send my number. I'll send my number. I'll send my number. Thank you.
We can also join the in fact, can also be a green also.
Thank you.